I'd like to tell you a story about a man named Simon Wiesenthal. Simon Wiesenthal lived in the time of the Second World War. Simon Wiesenthal was actually in one of Hitler's death camps, and he lost 89 of his relatives to the Nazi regime. He tells a story about when he was young and in one of these concentration camps. And one day, Simon was taken from a work detail, and he was ushered up the back stairs into a hospital room. The hospital room was dark. Inside, there were lots of beds, but there was only one person laying on one bed, and it was a Nazi SS soldier. He was all wrapped in gauze. He was wounded very badly. And this soldier lay there, and they took Simon, and they put him next to this soldier, whose name was Carl. They had him sit next to the bed as Carl spoke to him. Carl told Simon that he had been wounded so badly he was about to die. He said to Simon, I can't go until you've forgiven me. He says, I know you're just a Jew, but just a Jew will do at this time. He says, you see, I grew up in the Nazi SS regime. My family was always a part of it. As I became one of their soldiers and officers, I took part in many of the atrocities that were done to the Jews. He said, but one particular one haunts me. Simon tried to get up and leave several times, but they kept forcing him to stay and listen to Carl. Carl told a story of how they had gone into a town and then they had rounded up all of the Jews that lived in that town. And Carl had them put in one big wooden building and then had the building boarded up. And then Carl gave the order to burn the building down. And now Carl lay on his deathbed begging Simon to forgive him so that he could go in peace. Simon said, after he listened to the story, Carl waited. Simon got up one final time, and this time he was allowed, and he left the room. And he left the man unforgiven. The question that I have for you tonight, it's on your outline. Should Carl, the Nazi SS German soldier, should he be forgiven? Should Simon have forgiven him? There are three responses. You don't answer yet. The answer is yes, he should be forgiven. Your answer could be no, I would not forgive him. Or there's a third answer. I would forgive him, but only under certain circumstances. Only unless certain things took place. And those are the three options we have. We're in the book of Genesis, and we're going to be looking through Genesis chapter 44, if you want to turn there. Give you a quick recap of where we're at. We're talking about the story of Joseph. Joseph grew up with 11 other brothers, one younger than him. And Joseph's older brothers all despised him because Joseph was the most loved of his father. So these brothers sold Joseph off as a slave and had Joseph sent to Egypt. They told the father he was dead. Joseph was eaten by an animal, basically. They made this whole elaborate scheme. And here's Joseph off in Egypt where he has to figure out life. Doesn't know their language. Doesn't know their culture, doesn't have a single friend, and he is the lowest of low. He is a slave. He's taken into the house of a man named Potiphar, where in Potiphar's house, Joseph serves God 100% and serves Potiphar 100%. Eventually, through some crazy circumstances and some lies, Joseph is put in jail where he didn't deserve to go, where again, Joseph serves 100%, gives his whole heart to everything he's called to do. Eventually, Joseph is brought out when they find out he can interpret dreams. And he interprets the Pharaoh's dream and tells the Pharaoh how 7 good years of harvesting are coming and then 7 poor years of drought are coming. And the Pharaoh is so impressed with Joseph, he puts him in charge of all of Egypt, Pharaoh sits back as number one, but Joseph runs everything as number two. Joseph stores the grain, and then the seven bad years hit. And then people from all surrounding countries come looking for food, grain. And Joseph is in charge of weeding it out. When Joseph's brothers show up, Joseph knows who they are. They don't know who Joseph is. He's changed. He looks Egyptian now. And Joseph puts them to an immediate halt, shows suspicion with them. They don't know what's going on. They immediately start their guilty consciences, as we talked about a couple weeks ago. Their telltale hearts start beating inside of them. Ugh, this is because of what we did years ago. And that's where we pick up our story tonight. Joseph has now come up with a plan for these brothers. He says, I see 10 brothers here, but you say that there are 11. So here's the deal. I'm going to keep one of you here. And one, the rest of you are going to go home. Get this other brother. Joseph wanted to see his younger brother, the little one, the one from same mother, from Rachel. And so Joseph sends his brothers home. And hey, they don't love this idea, but they have no choice. They're starving to death. He sends them home to return with Benjamin, the youngest brother. And Joseph brings them back before him. The brothers return, and they bring this young Benjamin with them. Joseph sees his baby brother. Joseph says, ah, I'm going to throw you a feast. Now these brothers are thinking, this guy's nuts. One minute he's treating us like we're guilty of all kinds of terrible trespasses. Next he's throwing us a feast. Joseph throws them a big feast. And Joseph then sells them the grain that they were looking for and sends them on their way with their grain. But before he does, Joseph has an elaborate scheme, elaborate test in mind to see what are his brothers like these days. Genesis 44, 1. How are we doing, Ms. Shanda? Very good. Joseph commanded the men in charge of his house. He said to them this, fill the men's sacks with as much food as they can carry and put each man's money back into his sack. Then put my silver cup in the youngest brother's sack along with the money for his grain. Well, the servant, he did what Joseph told him. Now the question is, why this elaborate setup? Why does Joseph try to frame Benjamin, the little brother? Well, the answer is Joseph wants to see how his older brothers will treat this last remaining favored son of Rachel. Well, so the caravan sets off. The brothers leave. They think, okay, we did good. The caravan sets off, but then they're stopped. The Egyptians chase after them, and they stop the caravan. And they say, oh, we want to check your sacks. They check the sacks, and sure enough, there's the money, and there's Benjamin with Joseph's very own silver goblet. So they're all hauled back, and they know, okay, we're dead. We're dead. This is the end. Joseph brings them in front of them. They still don't know it's Joseph. And he sentences Benjamin, that Benjamin will stay and be a slave in Egypt. What in the world do the brothers do now? Well, verse 18 tells us, after Benjamin is sentenced, then Judah went up. This is another brother. Then Judah, the brother, went up to Joseph and said, please, sir, let me speak openly with you. Don't be angry with me, although you are equal to Pharaoh. Joseph was getting his answer here. He says, sir, please let me stay and be your slave in the boy's place. And let the boy go back with his brothers. How could I go back to my father if the boy isn't with me? I couldn't bear to see my father's misery. And with that self-sacrificial plea, Joseph knew. Judah, for sure, had changed. Judah, the brother who had come up with the idea to sell Joseph as a slave, was now begging for young Benjamin to be set free. Joseph sees Judah's offer to take himself as prisoner in exchange for Benjamin, and Joseph sees the change. The Bible goes on to tell us that Joseph is ready to burst out in uncontrollable tears at Judah's new self-sacrificial attitude. But the question I want to pose tonight is this. Would Judah's new attitude, would it be enough to pass Joseph's test? And is this the trigger that would release Joseph's forgiveness? Is this deed on Judah's part what merited Joseph to extend grace? Well, the answer, gang, surprisingly, is no. That is not what triggered it. And the reason is this. This statement. Joseph wasn't testing his brothers to see if he would forgive them. Joseph was merely seeing who it was who he would be forgiven. Does that surprise you? Because when I read it, it surprised me. But as I studied it, we come to the realization this was what Joseph was going to do, and we'll get to the proof of that later. So tonight, I want to look at really three aspects of forgiveness that we learn from this story, three major components. It's not all there is to know about forgiveness, but three major pieces that Joseph's story teaches us. The first one is this, point one, forgiveness must be extended. Forgiveness is unconditional, gang. God gives absolutely no reason. God gives us no scenario. God offers us absolutely no trespass that will allow us to harbor bitterness or hatred or to be unforgiving. I'll say that again. God gives us absolutely no reason. There is no scenario that you can come up with. There is no trespass that will allow us to harbor bitterness or hatred or be unforgiving. None. Nothing. No matter how bad, forgiveness is unconditional. The Apostle Peter, he went to Jesus and asked him this in Matthew 18, 21. Then Peter came to him and asked, Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? Seven times? Jesus answers, no. 70 times seven. Jesus said, it just keeps going on. In fact, Jesus goes on to teach his disciples that there are repercussions in our relationship with God if we do not forgive. Look at Mark 11, 25. Whenever you pray, Jesus speaking, whenever you pray, forgive anything that you have against anyone. Then your Father in heaven will forgive your failures. But if you do not forgive, neither will your Father which is in heaven forgive your trespasses. Gang, it would be so much easier to say that Joseph's testing of his brothers was to determine whether or not they deserved to be forgiven. That, my friends, is what Simon Wiesenthal was doing with that dying Nazi soldier. You see, Simon, on his handout, he checked the box that said, only under certain circumstances and certain conditions. We misread what Joseph was, or he certainly misread what Joseph was doing. Remember, Joseph wasn't testing his brothers to see if he would forgive them. He was merely seeing who it was that he would be forgiving. I'll prove that to you as we go on. But go back to that first question on your handouts. Go back to that question. And put a big check mark, a big X, a big star around yes. Here, gang, is where God's thinking transcends our thinking. And here is where we must go on what God says is best and not what we think or what anyone else thinks is best. Simon Wiesenthal went and asked dozens and dozens of rabbis and teachers what they would do. But their answers really meant nothing. The problem with Simon's situation was that throughout his life, since that happened to him, he has been receiving people's advice. He has been receiving what people believe he should have done. And gang, that doesn't add up to nothing, what people tell you. The only truth that can be found, and the only truth we need to live by, is in the Bible. God's truth, God's advice, God's belief. I recently had someone ask me at the firehouse for my opinion on one of the big topics today that came up on our TV screen. Hey, Drew, what do you think about that? My answer is always the same. I always say the same thing. It doesn't matter what Drew Kleindel thinks. The only thing that matters is what God says about it. In fact, it matters so much that God wrote it down for us and put it in our hands as the best published book, the most published book in history of the world. Joseph, back to him. He had God's spirit on him. And he knew that forgiveness had to be extended. There was no choice in the matter. It was not conditional or whether or not we believe the forgiveness is deserved. It doesn't need to be deserved. Forgiveness must be extended. It is unconditional. The takeaway on this, here's what I want you to chew on when you're in one of these circumstances. Obey now, understand later. Joseph set the example for this. Joseph obeyed God when he was being sold as a slave, though he didn't understand why it was happening. He obeyed God and served hard for God. Joseph served obediently in a slave owner's house. He didn't understand why he was there. Joseph went to prison and was a light there, helping others, letting his light shine, his love for God shine in prison. And he obeyed God through all the loneliness of being in Egypt with nobody there for him. He obeyed now, but the later came, didn't it? As for you and me, we need to scratch out those other options on that handout. Scratch them out. Get rid of them. Number two, number three, they're not options. The answer God gives us is to be forgiving. The answer is always, yes, you must forgive. If we obey now, we will understand later. I promise. The Bible promises. Let's pick up our story. Judah now has just ended his plea. Please, please let the little one go home. I'll stay. I'll be your slave. But don't do this to the little boy. And I can't have this happen to my father. No more pain for my father. Here's what Joseph says. Joseph could no longer control his emotions in front of everyone who was standing around him. So he cried out, "Have everyone leave me." No one else was there when Joseph told his brothers who he was. He cried so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" His brothers could not answer him because they were afraid of him. "Please, come closer to me," Joseph said to his brothers. And when they did so, he said, "I am Joseph, the brother you sold into slavery in Egypt. Now don't be sad or angry with yourselves that you sold me. God sent me ahead of you to save lives." Joseph had moved past the injustice dealt to him, and he embraced the good that God had orchestrated. Now, only after all of his obedience did Joseph realize what God was doing and why it played out the way he did, the way it did. Now, his brothers, on the other hand, they were terrified. Point two, about forgiveness. Second aspect we need to learn about forgiveness is forgiveness must be real. And forgiveness must be accurate. Gang, forgiveness doesn't pretend that nothing happened. That would be wrong. The second sentence out of Joseph's mouth, if you go back and read it, was, "I'm the brother you sold into slavery." Joseph had no problem stating accurately the sin that he was forgiving. He does not act as if it was nothing. He does not act as if it must be looked past. He does not ignore it. Instead, he addresses it and he assures his brothers his forgiveness is real. Gang, we have to be careful. There is a common practice that we do called rug sweeping, where we don't talk about what happened. We push it under a rug. We don't say the wrong that came at us. We don't go to the person who we need to forgive and say, "Hey, this is what happened, and I want to deal with it properly. I just want to let you know how what I saw, what I felt, how it came at me. Here's the sin, the off-base thing that happened that I want to forgive." Don't sweep it under a rug. Don't ignore it and wait for the next time and let it keep building and building and building. That is not the way God wants us to live our lives, and that is not going to be healthy in our families. Address what's wrong. Say it shouldn't be done, and forgive it. I'd like to offer you another takeaway on this point, and that's this. Be sure it really happened. Look at this. Rob Odell, and I find this statistic to be phenomenally important. Rob Odell gives statistics that 75% of all direct personal attacks on us, direct personal attacks that we feel, 75% of them are imaginary. They are based on our own misperception of reality. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but I have. Many years ago, I don't know, maybe the third phase of my fire department life, I've had many phases, was with a captain I really liked. He was a good captain, but he was a little rough. He wasn't rough with me, he was wonderful to me, but he could be rough. And he was especially rough, he was the captain of the firehouse, he was especially rough with our lieutenant who worked at the house with us. He did not like this guy. When I got to that firehouse, you could tell. He never spoke nice to him, he never spoke nice about him, he talked about him not behind his back, he talked about him like he was talking behind his back right in front of him. He was horrible to this guy. I don't know why he was so mean to this guy. I liked both of them. So one day when me and the captain were at the table downstairs and everybody else was gone, I said to him, "Hey, Captain Mo, can I ask you a question?" "Oh, sure, Drew." I said, "It's this personal question, though." "No, no, you go ahead and ask me." I said, "I was wondering, how come you're so mean to the lieutenant?" He says, "I'll tell you why." He said, "Before you got here, the day he was sent here, I walked into the room, and he was sitting at the floor watch desk doing his job, and I walked in and I said, 'Hey, good morning, welcome aboard.' And he said, 'Hmm.' And from that moment on, I never liked him." I said, "What was that?" He said, "I never liked him." "No, no, go back." I said, "When you walked in, what did he say?" He said, "When I walked in, I said, 'Hey, good morning, welcome aboard.' He said, 'Hmm.' That was it?" He said, "Yeah, I never liked him since then. He got a bad attitude. He disrespected me and all the things he feels about me. I'm telling you, I don't put up with that, and I won't be disrespected." I said, "Captain Mo, I said, I know him. I said, I worked with him way back when. He's been to my house and fixed my roof for me. I said, I gotta be honest with you, he's got a weird way of talking. He's got a little weird affect to him. And sometimes he doesn't act properly, but he don't mean it. There's nothing there. He don't mean nothing by that. I know him. He's done that a million times. He might have something on his mind. He might not have. Believe me, he's a little strange, but he's a good guy." "Nope. I will hate him till the day I die." I said, "Wow." Captain Mo was suffering from something called not being sure it really happened, because it never really happened. Maybe a person says something and we take it the wrong way. Something really didn't happen that you think happened. Maybe a person doesn't call when we expect them to. "Ah, I know what that means. That communicates loud and clear to me." Well, maybe they lost their phone. Maybe they're busy. Maybe they're stuck in traffic. Could be anything. Make sure it really happened. Maybe we think somebody did something, and they never really did it. You got to be sure something really, really happened. Forgiveness has to be real, and it has to be accurate. Point three, let's bring this home. Third aspect, forgiveness must be accepted. For this last point, I would like all of us to switch hats. Instead of being the one who needs to forgive someone, okay, instead of being the Joseph, the one who needs to forgive, picture yourself as the one who needs to be forgiven. You know, we saw it tonight in the drama. Someone who needed to be forgiven was something that was a little bit too big for them to handle, wasn't it? You know, for a lot of us, we have trouble accepting that kind of grace. I'll never forget when I was in Bible college and we started our psychology class. And I don't know anybody who doesn't like psychology. Psychology is incredible. And they had us watch a movie. And it was a story of a family. And the family had a teenage boy. 18. And the family was affluent. And they were doing well. But this boy could not make life work. He was at odds with everything. Nothing went right in this kid's life. He was depressed. He had all kinds of problems. He was very promising. And they said he was a wonderful little boy. We don't know what happened. The parents are at odds with him. He can't make it work in school. He can't have friends. He's just really a mess, this kid, this older teenager. And so the family, they wind up in counseling. And this is really the whole case of the movie. They're watching. They're in counseling, and they're just learning more about each other. The father learning about the mother learning about the father, the son involved. It just goes on and on, just keep uncovering different parts of their life until eventually, years down the road, the young man talking to the psychologist by himself tells the story. He says, you know, I'm not an only child. I said, what? I'm not an only child. I didn't know you had any brothers, the psychologist said, or sisters. No, I had a brother. We loved sailing, me and my brother. Built a sailboat together. We're going to sail the seven seas, you know. Doctor said, what happened? Did you do that? We went out. Parents told us, be careful. You know, I'm the older brother. Be careful out there. You know, it's a little crazy. We went out. Got into a storm. I didn't know what I was doing with a sailboat. I flipped that thing over, and the mast hit my brother on the head. Rain coming down like crazy. Fog. My brother never made it home. So I killed my brother. The doctor said, you didn't kill your brother. He said, that's what my parents say, you know, that I didn't kill him. That's what everybody says. Nobody holds anything against me. The doctor says, are you sure about that? You really believe that? You sure your parents have forgiven you? Yeah, everybody. He said, have you forgiven you? Never will, boy said. Never will. Gang, forgiveness has to be forgiven. Forgiveness has to be accepted. This is a tough thing for us to do. Especially if the wrong that we're being forgiven for has caused consequences that you have to live with or consequences that you have to see over and over again. Joseph's brothers dealt with this. They had a hard time with number three. They couldn't forgive themselves in the end. At the end of the Genesis, here's what it says. It says, after Jacob died, this is the father, this is years later, 13 years later, after Jacob the father died, Joseph's brothers said this, what if Joseph is still angry with us? We did many wrong things to him. What if he plans to pay us back? So they sent a message to Joseph that said, your father gave this command before he died. He said to us, you have done wrong and have sinned and done evil to Joseph. Tell Joseph to forgive you, his brothers. So now, Joseph, we beg you to forgive our wrong. We are the servants of the God of your father. When Joseph received that message, he cried. You see, for Joseph, it was over 13 years ago. That chapter was closed. I was going to forgive you no matter what, because that's what God asked us to do. The fact that you changed is even better. But I was going to forgive you, and I did forgive you. It's over. Forgiveness has to be accepted. But for a lot of us, we have trouble with that. I can think of plenty of things that I've done, plenty of things that I've said, plenty of places I've been that when I think about them, I cringe. I don't like the fact I did that. But I won't let myself come under condemnation. That's where you just keep condemning yourself. I won't let myself come under condemnation for them anymore because God says they're forgiven. Have you asked for forgiveness? Then you got it with God. Now, I don't know where you're at tonight. I don't know what you've done. I don't know who you've hurt, what wrong you've committed. That's between you and God. Like we said at the start, the thing where we get tripped up is we don't use forgiveness. We don't forgive other people the way we should. And we don't embrace the forgiveness that God has for us. So tonight, I'm going to have you do a little work with God. Talk to him in your heart. Speak to him. Tell him what you need to be forgiven of. Or maybe there's something that you need to forgive someone of and let go. Get rid of that ball and chain on your back. Set yourself free. Let God set you free. I'm going to ask the band and worship leaders to come back. We're going to do one more song. Might be a little different than what we've done so far. But in this song, it allows us the opportunity to say, God, I want to be forgiven. God, I want to let go of those things that I did that are wrong. And they're so big and so gnarly that I can hardly let them out. But I'm going to give them to you tonight. I ask you to forgive me. And what you need to do is accept it. Let God wash you. Make you clean. It's okay. There's a new start waiting.